Our lives here upon the earth often operate on two different levels. On the one hand, there are the things that we do in this world, there are outcomes of the things that we do that are more obvious and more visible. Perhaps we can say this is the earthly level on which things are done. But underneath that is another level, and that, I suppose, we could call the spiritual level. And that level is not always so obvious. But it's important because that's really the level that God is looking at. He's really paying attention to. And I think that can be demonstrated in the passage that Danny read this morning as he was reading through the account of the Lord's crucifixion, and my mind, to some degree, turning to the thoughts of the lesson, I really thought about what was happening there. That is, that on an earthly level, a man was being put to death. His life was coming to an end. There was violence being done and blood was flowing. And from an outward, human, earthly standpoint, a death occurred. But what was going on a spiritual level at that time? Not so obvious. Not so apparent. Those that were involved in the death didn't really understand the significance that God was seeing in that. And so I think part of the challenge that we have in this world is to train ourselves to see not just the surface and the earthly things that are happening and the significance thereof, but see how that relates to a deeper level. And that's the spiritual level, the things that are not readily apparent, but so very important. In the earlier reading, Matthew chapter 25, we're not actually going to talk about that text this morning. We'll do that tonight. But I do want to draw one observation from the text, the parable of the talents, and that is God is looking for a return. God is paying attention to what's going on in our lives in this relationship between the physical and the spiritual, and what He wants to see in us is a return on His investment. What are we doing with the physical things? How are we handling the earthly things so that there is benefit being accrued in a spiritual realm? And in order to talk about that in a more specific way, I'd like for us to apply that principle to our families and try to look at the relationship between the physical elements of living in this world and having a family in this world, and then perhaps look a little bit more deeply to a spiritual level and ask ourselves how much we appreciate what's happening in our marriages and in our families on a spiritual level. Well, let's consider something as overtly material as our house, the physical dwelling in which we live. Well, there are all kinds of earthly benefits to living in a house. It gives us a sense of location where our family usually is. It protects us from the elements that can either be unpleasant or downright threatening to us. It provides an element of privacy that is important to the development, again, of our families and perhaps to our own psychological well-being. Our homes provide protection not just from the elements, but perhaps from threats of violence that may be done against us. And those are not unimportant elements of the home in which we live, and there's an awful lot of attachment that we end up having to this physical dwelling place for earthly reasons. But I think as we look a little bit more deeply at our dwelling place, we might be able to see some spiritual import of this place where our family resides and this place that tends to house the riches that we have in this world. For example, if we turn to 1 Timothy, the third chapter, page 798 in the Pew Bible, as we look just briefly at the qualifications of one who would be a spiritual shepherd of the flock, verse 2 is giving a variety of indicators to a man's fitness for that. And you notice in 1 Timothy 3, 2, one of those qualities is being hospitable. And I think this strikes perhaps at the heart of our interaction with our brethren. And that is, our home not only exists for our benefit and gives us various blessings, but what are we doing with that physical dwelling place, and do we see it as an asset to be shared to the benefit of other people? And I think this qualification really speaks to the interest that a prospective elder or a current elder has in other people. Does he enjoy being with other people? Does he see the importance in interacting with other people to the point that he would even see his home as an opportunity to share social occasions with them, or even provide for their needs if need be, providing shelter for someone else? Also in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 10, qualifications are given here of a woman who would be taken into a position of permanent support in the local church. And in verse 10, look at the different qualities that are mentioned here. She's well reported for good works. If she's brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she's washed the saints' feet, if she's relieved the afflicted, if she's diligently followed every good work. Most of those we would obviously see as being spiritual responsibilities. And by our intent to serve God, we're then serving other people. But in that list is lodged strangers, shared one's dwelling place, again, for the benefit of others. In the New Testament, we also have sort of a negative view of that. In 2 John, verses 9 and 10, John is addressing the not sharing of our home with someone, and even telling us not to do that on some occasion. This is page 821 in the Pew Bible. 2 John, verses 9 and 10. Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house, nor greet him. Here, hospitality is not to be extended. And there's a deeper spiritual element afoot here. We've got these two levels again. We've got the physical home and the extension of hospitality, but now we've got this added level of where is this person spiritually that we're considering, if you will, extending the right hand of fellowship to and aiding and abetting them by giving them a place to stay in our home. And in this case, John says don't do that if they're not sharing spiritually in the things of God. So how do we see our dwelling place? A lot of earthly benefits, certainly, but do we also see it on a deeper spiritual level? Am I using this place of dwelling God has given me and my family to benefit others? Well, let's look more directly, perhaps, at our mates. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. It's page 450 in the Pew Bible. Certainly, there are many, many earthly benefits to being married and to sharing our lives with another person. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, I don't think specifically is addressing marriage, but again, it's one of those passages where I think the principle certainly carries over into our home life and relationships. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor, for if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how will one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and the threefold cord is not quickly broken. There are a lot of this world benefits to sharing life with a companion. There's simply companionship itself. There's the presence of another person that either enhances the good elements of life or moderates the bad elements. Supports us and strengthens us when things are difficult, and we've all felt that desire to share the excitement and the joy of life with someone else. To do it alone somehow lacks something. There's assistance that comes. Physical assistance sometimes in lifting one another up and caring for another when they're ill. And so there are a lot of earthly benefits to marriage and companionship. But certainly it goes deeper than that, especially if two people married are pursuing spiritual goals. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, Peter refers to those who are Christians and are married after considering the opposite, a Christian woman and a non-Christian man being married in verses 1 through 6. But 1 Peter 3, page 816, the Pew Bible, verse 7, "Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." Not only are there earthly benefits that may come to us in having a companion, but Peter uses this very interesting term, being heirs together of the grace of life. Here are two people that are sharing not only the physical life together, but they're sharing their faith together. They're engaged in spiritual objectives. They're supporting one another, not physically when they're sick, but spiritually when they're weak. And not just a helper in difficult times, but the joys of sharing your faith and your hope in God and your pursuit to be what God would have you to be, to share that with another person. The joy that we share with someone else makes the original thing over which we're rejoicing magnified. And certainly that's true in a spiritual sense. And you'll also notice here that if we're not, as husbands in this verse, doing as we should toward our wives, especially treating them as we should as an heir together with us, our prayers are going to be hindered. That is, there's going to be spiritual fallout to not behaving properly in this essentially an earthly relationship. It's a relationship that does not continue in heaven. Jesus tells us that. It's designed for this world. It's designed to make things in this world easier and better. But there are deep spiritual implications to this as well. Also, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, page 770 in the Pew Bible, the relationship that we have with our husbands or our wives helps us spiritually in keeping us pure, in channeling and directing and satisfying the physical desires that God has rightfully and in a good way placed within us. But we find there's a spiritual benefit to being married and having a companion, and then to satisfy those desires in a way God would be pleased with. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5. "Do not deprive one another, except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Here's a physical relationship with many joys and pleasures attached to it, but a spiritual benefit. Again, there's a sub-level here of spirituality. And so our companions help us to be faithful to God when the relationship is operating as it should. Well, we've talked about the physical element of living in a house. What about our income? What about the profit that we make through being gainfully employed? Let's go back to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 5, page 451 in the Pew Bible. Ecclesiastes 5, verses 18 through 20. A couple of places in Ecclesiastes extols the virtue of productive labor from different standpoints. But notice in this particular reading, Ecclesiastes 5, beginning in verse 18, "Here's what I've seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all of his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God gives him, for it is his heritage. And as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart." There's physical benefit in this life that comes to us by working, by being productively employed. not just physical benefit of providing the food and clothing and the home that we talked about earlier, but you'll notice there's even emotional balance, perhaps, that comes to us as noted in verse 20. He will not dwell unduly on the days of his life because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. I suppose we could maybe apply that in different ways. But to be actively involved in supporting ourselves and others dependent upon us will keep us from brooding morbidly on this life, from being depressed and discouraged because of something we've done in the past or something that didn't go right, and we have the tendency now to just reflect on that to our own distraction from the present. We're perhaps not emotionally and mentally healthy because we can't get rid of the past. We might have too much time on our hands, too much reflection being done. And so Solomon here is saying that part of the benefit of working and diligently supporting ourselves is even mental and emotional. But it goes deeper than that. Turn with me to Ephesians chapter 4, page 788. Again, many earthly benefits that come by providing an income for ourselves, purchasing the things that we need to make this life better, perhaps easier, more comfortable and convenient. But God's looking a little bit more deeply at our income than that. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that..." Here's the specific application of this. "That he may have something to give him who has need." You know, there's a material level here, an earthly level of providing for our needs and those that are dependent on us. And then there's this other level. How are we using these resources to benefit others? And which one do you think God's really taking a good hard look at? Here, that we may give to him who has need by what God allows us to earn and perhaps to accumulate. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, page 797, in the Pew Bible, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 10 through 12, here Paul is addressing indolence or laziness among the brethren. And they've adopted a false view of the return of the Lord, thinking that it's imminent. And Paul is telling them that it's not imminent, and that they need to be productively employed and providing for themselves, as God would expect them to in verse 10, chapter 3. "Even when we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Now those who are such we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread." And then he says in verse 14, "If anyone does not obey our word in this epistle, note that person and do not keep company with him, that he may be ashamed." I tell you, one of the benefits of being actively involved in work is it keeps us out of each other's lives. Now, we need to be involved in each other's lives to the degree that we are not meddling and can help and benefit and support others, but there is a line we can cross when we have too much time on our hands and we're focused too much on other people, and that is we become meddlesome. And we begin to think that other people's business deserves our commentary. And what's happening in their lives is a matter of great importance in ours. And this is a mistake being made by the Thessalonian brethren because of a doctrinal outlook that is wrong. And I'll tell you, oftentimes doctrinal viewpoints have practical consequences. Sometimes it may be hard to connect the two, but very often they are connected at some point, if not immediately, in a delayed fashion. An improper doctrinal outlook somewhere is going to affect our behavior and our choices in life. And here's a case. Well, there's another element, spiritual element to this as well, and that is what we contribute to the collective work of the church. Our income is not just to provide our needs and those dependent on us, not just to keep us out of trouble, as it were, but that we might have something to contribute to the work of the Lord collectively. which we have already participated in this morning. Well, let's look at children. There are a lot of this world benefits to having children. There are some this world liabilities to having children. But there are a lot of benefits. And I think, to some degree, our society has lost this appreciation. I think there are a lot of people in our society that see children as liabilities only. Nuisances, being in the way, something to be avoided so that perhaps the couple married can focus on themselves. And I wonder how much benefit and richness is being forfeited by that kind of an outlook. But there's the ability to share and express our love for our children, I think, that occurs in a way that does not occur with any other relationship in this world. To be able to participate with God in creating life, bringing that life into being and then nurturing it and developing it and watching the various stages of that development and sharing in that kind of a project, if you will, with that depth of commitment brings to us an element of love we're not going to find somewhere else. You're not going to find it through a puppy. You're not going to find it through a friend. You're not going to find it in an outside interest in hiking the Appalachian Trail. You're going to get it by involving yourself in the nurture of a life either that you've helped produce with your mate or has been produced by someone else and you have adopted as your own. There's great joy and great satisfaction in sharing that kind of a relationship. And again, like with a mate, there's companionship. And a sense of that that goes beyond the time that our children even leave our homes. There's still an involvement. You've seen the commercial? The old couple, they're up in like an upstairs room and the kid's leaving for college or whatever and they're just like, oh, see you, fine, thanks for coming, you know, bye. And as soon as the door's shut, they start, you know, making these plans for what they're going to do in this room. You know, and then they're shown kind of taking dance lessons, and then they're shown working out, you know, in the gym that they put in the room, and they're doing all these kinds of things, and at the end of the commercial, you know, they put it back the way it was, hoping Junior will come home and visit and share with them. You know, I never remember what those commercials are about, but the story, you know, in that little 30 seconds is pretty good. The investment that we make in our children and raising them and then the desire not to meddle, but to be involved in their lives even after they're gone. It's a wonderful blessing. There's some vicarious enjoyment through our children. That, of course, can go too far, too, where parents are living their lives out through their children. That is wrong, and we should not do that. But certainly when our children succeed at something, is there not joy? And do we not feel some kind of a, you know, swelling and a puffing out and saying, I had something to do with that, you know? They succeed or, you know, they are having some element of joy in their lives, and so we enjoy that through them. And it can be just as downright practical as somebody to take care of me in my old age. That I've got some support, you know, the arrows in the quiver. I have those, if I have raised them right and treated them right, that will care for me when I reach a point in life where I'm elderly and feeble and I need some help. And who's going to be more persuaded to do that, a stranger or someone that I've invested my life in? Well, it doesn't really have to be argued out, I suppose, for us to understand there's a deeper spiritual level to raising children. And that is to raise them not to care for us in our old age, but to give them back to God. That God has entrusted a soul, a new life that will be forever. A new life that will be forever. And God says to us, here, I want you to raise this child. And so we have the responsibility, as Paul talks about in Ephesians 6:4, to bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Not just to make sure they get a good education, have a career, but train them in the ways of the Lord. Why? So they'll grow up and love the Lord and desire to serve Him and give back to Him what He has given to us in them. God gives us that child with so many elements of joy attached, and we then try our very best to give that soul back to God. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, again, a chapter dealing with eldership, and indicators of those that would serve well as shepherds. 1 Timothy 3, verses 4 and 5, page 798, Pew Bible. 1 Timothy 3, verses 4 and 5. An elder must be one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. Well, there's sort of like, you know, the earthly level, the this world level. You're looking at certain indicators as to, you know, how his children are functioning, but there's a deeper level here. 4, verse 5, if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not that he's only raising his children unto this objective of preparing for the eldership, but it just sort of naturally happens. If I'm diligent and I'm intent on developing my children spiritually, Paul says, you know, that's a pretty good indicator of a man that can do that with the brethren. There's a good indicator of a man, not because his business is successful, not because he got a master's degree or a PhD. There's a lot of things that we look at in this life and measure success or failure by. But in governing or ruling or shepherding, leading the people of God, feeding them, what are you going to look at? Paul says, look at his family. Look at the nurture of his children. Look at it, at the authority that he exercises in his family. There's a spiritual level that undergirds this more visible and outward or material level of things. A sister recently was telling me a story about her children who had grown up and left the home and had both the children had gotten married. And the woman was sitting with her husband relaxing late one night, and one of the children called, and they had been at a gospel meeting. And they were excited about what they had heard at the gospel meeting. They wanted to call home and say, yeah, I heard this sermon, and it was great, and here's some of the points that were made, and it was very encouraging. And well, after this conversation was over, the woman hung up the phone, and it rang a little bit later. It was the other child who had left and gotten married, and they had been at the lectures at Florida College, and they had heard a good lesson, and they just wanted to call it. I just heard this really good lecture, you know, and it was wonderful, and there were points made, and it was really helpful, and blah, 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 blah. And she hung up from that one and then just thought, wasn't that great? You know, one of those little signs that maybe we did something right. Our children are now out on their own and away from us, and nobody was there to make them worship or attend a lecture, but they chose to do that, and they were excited about some spiritual benefit that they got from doing that. You know, that's what we're in this for as parents. We're trying to see some of those milestones along the way that our children are growing and developing spiritually. Not merely that we enjoy their companionship or we're living vicariously through them or preparing for our old age, but we're actually seeing evidence of souls working their way back to God. Well, even retirement, I think, can be seen on two different levels, and this is not exhaustive. You can kind of do this on your own and pick out other elements that sort of have these two natures to them. Well, retirement might be a time of rest. Worked hard your whole life, and now it's time to just relax a little bit and enjoy the freedom of not being on the boss's schedule and not having to make business trips and et cetera, et cetera. To work on your marriage, to now that the kids are raised and the work is slowing down, maybe my wife or my husband or I can spend more time together and do some things that we've put off for a long time because life demanded other things from us. But at the same time, is not perhaps retirement a time for God? More freedom and flexibility to serve God, more concentration on His Word, and the ability to teach and serve others. And again, do more for others that perhaps has been distracted from earlier in life by our other responsibilities. It might be a time to use our wisdom, that which we hopefully have prayed for and asked God for and gained by our studies of people and studies of life and studies of God's Word. Now that I'm retired, it doesn't mean retired from the Lord. It might mean now I have opportunity to use my wisdom to help other people and serve them. Here's the danger. The danger is we can get so consumed with that which is visible. You know, if I don't make a house payment, that's kind of a visible consequence in a material way. If I don't show up at work, there's a consequence. If I, you know, there's all kinds of visible and some immediate and obvious consequences by not putting our attention on the earthly side of this chart. And what that can tend to do is get us to focus too much on the part of this life that's obvious. The part of this life that is concerned about being here in this world. And then we have the danger of losing sight of this whole other level of life that really is the more important level. And that's the one that you've got to look at through the mind. You've got to see through eyes of understanding and faith and measuring it in a different way than just our physical senses. That takes more effort. That takes more concentration. We have to stop and pay attention more so to what's on the right side of the screen up there than what is on the left. It's not so obvious. Our life can be fairly intact in terms of things on the left side of the screen. And it appears to be successful. You know, the house payments are being made, and the marriage, you know, we do get along with each other, and the income is adequate, and our children aren't in jail, and, you know, maybe retirement is fruitful. And we look at that and measure all that and say, yeah, life is good. And the deceiving thing is this whole substrata, this spiritual foundation underneath it is not even there. Watching a little blurb the other night on TV, and a woman was in a brand new house and fell right through her tile floor. They didn't support the floor like they should have, and wouldn't that be a shock? Standing there on your solid tile floor in the kitchen, boom, you're in the basement. Well, you know, this is how this can work spiritually. There's just not a spiritual foundation underneath. We don't even realize it because we look down and see tile. We don't see that there's no support underneath that. And the time comes we may need it either in this world or we're in judgment and it's too late. We've not paid attention spiritually to this element of life. I also think that when we're aware of that spiritual element, it moderates the bad things that can happen to us in this life. Sometimes it is difficult to make the house payment. Sometimes the children are sick. And sometimes life just takes a bad turn. That just happens, the way the world is. But if we're looking at life on this deeper spiritual level, we have the wherewithal to not be destroyed because things aren't the way we wish that they were on the left side of the screen. And then finally, let me just make this point and we'll conclude. All of this is to God's glory. We must learn to look at the material life that we have in this world and the deeper underlying spiritual significance of those things and realize that ideally what God is looking for, as we said earlier, is the return. God deserves to be glorified. He deserves to have us live and receive His blessings. And I appreciate Grady's prayer this morning. It was heavy on Thanksgiving. And that's a good thing. Because we need to be aware that what we have is from God. What we are is from God. And who God is should direct our thinking wholly and completely to Him. Everything accruing back to God. As He blesses, as He invests, as He is benefiting us in various ways, we become creatures who are able to see His hand in all of that and see the deeper spiritual implications of what we're here about. And we then begin to turn that back to God. And so we see our house is, how can that reflect to God's glory? And we see our marriage, how can that reflect to God's glory? We look at our children, how can that reflect to God's glory? Our income, how can I use that to reflect on God's glory? Even my retirement years, or on and on and on, you make up the list. Am I glorifying God in my life in view of what He's given to me, and in view of this deeper spiritual principle that undergirds our life here on the earth? Do you find perhaps that you've been distracted by the obvious things, the material things, just making it in this world, and that sort of drowned out the spiritual? May we encourage you to reflect on what really matters and what are the true and deeper spiritual principles of this life. If you can do that, the other will be put in perspective. And that begins with a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Do you appreciate the spiritual nature of the passage that, again, Danny read earlier? Jesus died, a human being lost his life that day, but it was a vicarious death of the Son of God for the sins of all mankind. And not all mankind means me. He didn't just die for the blob of people on the earth. He died for me. And do you see that? And if you do and you want to respond to the Lord in obedience, we'll be glad to help you with that even now as we stand and sing.